Hey everyone, welcome back to the Bike Pack Adventures podcast. We are less than 4 weeks away from the third Canadian Shield Bikepacking Summit, the 2025 Canadian Shield Bikepacking Summit. And I'm finally feeling a little less stressed. Things are coming along together. Sponsors are all kind of locked in there. And I have a couple weeks to kind of slow down a bit and just work on some of the smaller aspects of the summit. So super stoked for that. If you haven't got tickets yet, you can still get them. I have to put in the shirt order within about 10 working days before the summit, so 2 weeks. So if you haven't yet got your tickets and you would like the free event shirt, I recommend you get them before event minus 2 weeks. Other than that, nothing too much is new here in, Eastern Ontario, Western Quebec. I finished maple syrup season, so I've got about 20 liters of syrup ready to be indulged upon. I am ready to get some little bikepacking adventures in, with the first one being this weekend. We're going to do a little family trip up to a local campground, and it'll be a short day. It's like 25 to 30 kilometers. I want to make it nice and easy on my wife and daughter and make it enjoyable rather than a typical Chris Panaski type torture. Other than that, then I got a scouting weekend, not Scouts Canada type thing, but a route scouting weekend. And then it's the long weekend where we're going to do some family stuff. And then after that's the summit. So time is flying. Obviously, your continued support of the podcast helps keeping the show going. So if you can, please share episodes and interviews that you like with friends and family. Give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast app you like to use. That would be much appreciated. And obviously, lastly, you could consider becoming a supporter of the podcast by joining Patreon as a sustaining partner. And you can do that at www.patreon.com/bikepackadventures. This continued support is what helps keep the podcast going. So I really do appreciate it. And that is it for now. Let's go on to this episode. In this episode of the Bike Pack Adventures podcast, I've had a chance to connect with Chris Mahoney, president of Go RVing Canada, a not-for-profit focused on promoting the RV lifestyle. After an initial discussion, we thought this could be a really interesting podcast to record, as both bikepacking and RVing lifestyles are centered around the exploration and spending time in nature. Throughout our discussion, I learned that Chris is actually a longtime mountain biker that loves to bring his bikes along when going RVing in the summer. He's also a keen bikepacker, and we spent a bit of time talking about some of his adventures, his upcoming and past adventures. More specifically, throughout this conversation, Chris and I spoke about how RVs can be a great catalyst for bikepacking adventures, what some amazing bicycle destinations are that are accessible by RV, the benefits of taking up the RV lifestyle, and what some common misconceptions are about RVing. Of course, we also talked about affordability and how they compare to other holidays. And lastly, we also talked about the rise in popularity of the camper van conversions and how more and more young people are attracted to the RV lifestyle, particularly with more and more people choosing jobs that allow them to work remotely. Guys, I hope you enjoy this episode. All right, Chris Mahoney, welcome to the Bike Pack Adventures podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really cool. When you guys first reached out, I was like, this is really interesting, you know, because I do see a huge correlation between RVing and biking. You know, there's definitely a lot of growth, I think, in the remote work field, where people are choosing to, you know, to live in a van or a camper and travel and work remotely and then do things like ride bikes or hike or whatever their sport might be. So I feel like it's a really cool, connection between the two.
I would agree. I mean, you know, the interesting thing, Chris, about us is like, so we're this nonprofit organization that's kind of set up to just promote the RV lifestyle. So I guess that's the first thing we should sort of say is like, Go RVing's like, you know, we're there to help people get on the road, you know, literally and figuratively. So we're brand agnostic, and what that means is like, I always run into so many different situations, like this being one of them, where it's like, wow, that's a big market for us, like a big activity for sure. But then I can also see like the sort of segment of RVing that is what you just described, you know, like more, a little bit more on the van life side, a little bit more on the nomadic entrepreneur outdoor adventure, which really covers like a lot of what we're doing. But it's really interesting to me how RVing kind of lends itself to all these different activities. And then when there's one like this, it's kind of like, wow, that's really specific, man. It's like, yeah, people just like to do it that way. And I think that's kind of cool. So I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. And
lots to chat about.
How long has GoRV in Canada? Is there an American affiliate to this that is separate?
Yeah. So we got to drop the Canada at the end. But yeah, so there's an American affiliate. We kind of just sort of do our own thing. Their market's a little bit more focused. You can imagine like tailgating and stuff like that, a little bigger in the US in that regard. But yeah, we've been around since 1997.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, quite a while. And I've been doing this for 13 years. I'm president of GoRVing, and basically it means I oversee the marketing for the RV lifestyle in Canada, including our Wildhood campaign, which we can talk a little bit about later. But yeah, it's it presents lots of different opportunities on a daily basis, I can tell you that.
Yeah, yeah. And judging from your background, you're a full-time RVer.
Oh, for sure, man. 100%. Yeah. No, actually, my wife and I, we had an Airstream until recently. So yeah, it was Betsy was her name. But yeah, and also I'm a pretty avid biker, so...
Yeah. And I was going to ask you that because I knew you were a biker. You know, what was it? Were you mountain biking when you were a kid, or was it road gravel? Like, what was your jam?
For me, it was mountain biking as a kid. Well, it was BMX to start, like when I was super, really young.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it went to mountain biking. And as I got older, kind of went more adventure biking. So bike packing. And I've more recently, like I've been doing like these sort of 10-day bike trips.
Oh, nice.
That are in Eastern Europe or around Europe area, and kind of joined a group of guys doing that every April. So actually, I'm taking off next week on the next one.
Oh,
so
fantastic. Where are you guys going on this trip?
It's actually my turn to pick. So I picked Albania. So
nice.
We're going to do 10 days through Albania. Yeah.
I think I was just talking to somebody a couple days ago on a podcast, and we were talking about like, Albania and Montenegro and all these places around in the Balkans, and phenomenal.
We did Montenegro like three or four years ago. And it was like, it was just awesome, man. It was so good. I would highly recommend it to anyone. I mean, I think it's like, seeing the diversity of like the mountains, all the way down into the plains and then the coastline. It's just, you couldn't think of anything more diverse. Like mountains is like very basic, very chill, all the food, et cetera. And then you get down to the coastline and there's like multi-million dollar boats and, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, what's Jeff Bezos has got his Amazon boat there or whatever. And, you know, it's wild.
And, these bike trips, are they like supported where you have a van and stuff, or are you more a little unsupported? And
so most of the time we're just rolling. We got our panniers and that's it, man. Sometimes they do have like, if you get into real issues, like we're fixing our bikes, most, you know, the basic stuff. But if we got a, you know, a bigger issue, like a crack frame or something like that, then yeah, they're obviously coming to replace it. But no, the guys I've been doing this with, they've been doing it for over 20 years and been all over Europe and whatever. So yeah, it's a cool trip to be on. It's a great way to see a country. It's a great way to experience different food diversity. And I would say the same thing applies to our conversation right now. I
mean, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And I look at what's happening in the, you know, in Canada. It's like all of a sudden, you know, I think it's like they're saying over 80% of Canadians are going to be here for the summer. They, you know, people don't want to travel as much, especially with what's going on down south. So I think, you know, what we're talking about applies to Canada. It's like there's no better time to maybe rent an RV and get on the road. And actually, not that that's a shameless plug, by the way. It's really not. I'm not, you know, but it's like, if you're going to do something this summer, why not try this out?
And they are. Like, I've talked to so many people that are like, they have no intention to travel to the U.S.
Totally.
You know, and not because it's not a beautiful place. I would say, you know, kilometer for kilometer, they have a lot more great sights to see, but that's because the majority of their country is not frozen, right? So, but there's so many cool things to see. But at the same time, like, Canadians are really great for taking a stand and saying, you know, okay, finally, like, we've had enough. And typically we're so passive aggressive, you know, as Canadians.
I would agree.
For Canadians and everything to happen like this, it's pretty serious stuff. And it's a shame. You know, it's unfortunate.
It is very unfortunate. And I'll tell you this, Chris, from my perspective, you know, we as an organization that's been around for, you know, over 25 years, we went through this a while back with the pandemic, and all of a sudden demand just like quadrupled for, you know, the RV lifestyle. Yeah. And not just renting, buying, everything. Like, people were like, holy shit, this backyard, you know, I've got this amazing backyard and I need to explore it. So I saw that, and then this kind of feels like that, except for with one big switch.
Which gas is prices are going down, baby.
Yeah, that's it. Gas prices are going down and elbows out. It was like you didn't have a choice. Now it's like, no, screw you. This is my decision. Yeah. I'm here.
It's funny because we bought an RV during COVID, and you know, we were happy. It was a 19-footer. It had a little washroom. It had a bunk that they had extended into like a double, so it was two doubles. And
yeah.
And we had this goal. We were going to drive across Canada, and but then all of a sudden fuel prices went mental. And in the end, we just did some stuff more locally, and finally sold it off. Just because, yeah, it wasn't fitting the profile. We had some other big trips planned to Turkey and abroad, and
cool.
So, but yeah, it was great that summer. Like, we did some stuff, but fuel was too expensive. This year, they just got rid of the carbon tax. Prices are going down. It's like, could be the perfect storm.
It definitely helps out. I mean, I would say it's always been a relatively affordable. I mean, if you compare it to other forms of travel and other forms of, let's call it.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I'm going to scroll down.
Well, let's use the word recreation, okay? Sure. So like, if, you know, I mean, obviously I'm here in Ontario, there's cottaging, there's boating, you know, there's like, that's what people are doing with their expendable income, if you can afford it. Cottages are crazy. But that said, you know, like, the RV lifestyle is still, like, when we do studies versus, like, you know, traveling to the US, for example, or going on a European vacation, it's like 70% cheaper than that mm-hmm. on a weekly basis than, you know, going, staying in hotels and doing all that kind of stuff. Obviously, the numbers have changed with, you know, they fluctuate with gas prices and inflation and everything you're talking about. But pound for pound, dollar for dollar, it's still a really affordable choice, whether you're actually purchasing or renting. It's a great way to get out there mm-hmm. with your friends and family, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even if you stay in campgrounds, like, I think what they typically run around $50 a night, something like that on average.
Yeah, $40-$50 a night, and depending on.
That's way cheaper than even the most budget hotel you'll find in Canada, right? Like, I think I find stuff with my old military discount of sometimes like $90 a night.
Yeah.
So.
No, I mean, it's, and think about food prices. Like, I mean, all my buddies, I don't know about you guys, but like, all my friends now, we just complain about, like, you know, can you believe how much that restaurant is? Like, all of a sudden Turtle Jack's or whatever is like, you know, $150 bucks for like two drinks and some wings and whatever else. I don't know. It's just, it's out of control. Whereas, like, at least with an RV, you're literally bringing, hey, like, I'm going to shop before, I'm going to buy that steak, I'm going to grab that, and I'm going to put it on the barbecue when I get there, and it's going to taste awesome. I'm going to have a beer and whatever. So I think you're bringing all the creature comforts of home.
Yeah. You mentioned affordability. What are some of the other, you know, benefits to RVing that you can talk about?
I mean, I think the biggest one, and especially for like this audience, you know, which is my audience as well, is like freedom and flexibility. It's like kind of there's nowhere else where you can really kind of just say, okay, I want to pick up, I want to go, I want to go here, I want to go there. Okay, it may not be as easy as that all the time. Places do book up, especially the provincial parks and stuff like that. So, I mean, I have to sort of give that as a bit of a disclaimer to everyone. But that said, if you're, you know, out in Quebec and Saguenay and you're not enjoying, you know, a particular area, you can say, you know what, let's take a left, let's go down here, let's check this out. I think especially for biking, you know, if that area is not your jam or whatever, for whatever reason, you can just switch it up. So I think freedom and flexibility is the biggest one. And then I kind of mentioned this before, alluded to it, is like the comforts of home. That's the one I hear the most, especially from families, moms and stuff like that. Like, you know, like just being able to bring everything for the kids, everything for yourself. you know, all those creature comforts are just kind of key. So it's basically a rolling home on wheels.
Yeah, be able to make that your own coffee instead of having that Tim Hortons coffee that you're like, why do I keep drinking this terrible stuff? But I do.
You know what, though? There's nothing like that campground morning coffee. I'm telling you, that's it. You know, everybody kind of gets up and they're just sort of slowly rustling around. But that morning,
it's the same when you're bike traveling, right? Like you get up and you make that coffee and it's not super hot because it's cold out and it's cooling off faster than, you know, but it's still just great. Like,
yeah. Totally.
What else? Yeah. So I guess, like, as you mentioned, comforts of home. So those are great things. And you can also bring more stuff than like compared to if you're traveling by plane or car or bicycle in our case, you know, you have the luxuries. You can bring these luxuries that you might not otherwise be able to take with you, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, those are the really main benefits is like freedom, flexibility, comforts of home, affordability. We've talked a little bit about that. There's a lot of value in being able to do this. It's a very cost-effective way to travel. Mm-hmm. And depending on what you want to do. And then there's the other side of it, which is like kind of more where I go with our campaigns like Wildhood, which is like the moments of connection and like that yearn to wanderlust and all that kind of stuff. And frankly, something that we saw coming out of COVID was mental health. Like mm-hmm. there was a lot of mental health issues with people being locked up or locked down for so long. And then, you know, as soon as you get outside, it's like, oh my God, thank God I got this. So I think that we saw a lot of connection between the benefits of outdoors and mental health. And then, you know, finally, I'd say activity, just generally active. You've got a very active audience, I know, here, Chris. So,
yeah, I guess the only I get is the my thoughts. It might not be the most applicable if you're looking to go big city hopping, but if you're looking to find those neat little places in between, kind of like bikepackers, then it's a great tool, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, depending on what kind of RV you have, right? And that's the other thing we have, you know, we don't want to bore everybody with all the different types, but I mean, there is literally like, you know, there's 10 different classifications of RVs starting at like tent trailers going all the way up to the big, you know, Class A bus. So there's kind of, there's something for everybody. And depending on what you're using to tow or if you're driving it, you know, cities are not as hard to access as you think. I mean, I've driven a 35 foot through Montreal and it was pretty, you know, the construction they got going around there is pretty wild. But I would say that what it does give you is access to in and around the cities. And then, as you said, everything else in between, which is totally awesome.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, if we get into like, if you're, let's say you want to go bikepacking, which is obviously, you know, that's completely different. Hey, we want to pick a route that's 700 kilometers long or something like that. I mean, the RV could serve to either help you initially with that in terms of scoping out the routes, and then it could even be a support vehicle or something.
Actually,
like that.
I could add to that. We you know the Petit Train Zinal from Mont Laurier to Montreal?
Yes.
200 kilometer route.
Yeah.
Our first bikepacking trip with the baby, she was 6 months old, was with the pull along trailer, and we would ride about 25K. My wife, my sister in law, the baby, and I, and the dog, who was in a basket most of the time.
Okay, I was going to say,
she'd run a lot, but also ride the basket. And then I'd leave them all behind, and I'd go with the dog back to the RV, pull it forward 25K, and then we'd ride another 25K, and then they'd rest and play with the baby and do that. And it was, you know, it was actually a really, really, really great way to do the trip. Because for my wife, who is a new mother and, you know, having a 6-month-old baby, she wanted those things, you know, like you mentioned before, comfort things, right, from home.
No, I mean, so you've just nailed it. That's everything we're talking about right there is, you know, the comforts of home, but still having the activity, still being outdoors, still getting that, you know, reprieve. And then honestly, using the RV as kind of like as a home base, as a hub. That's exactly what I'd be doing. As much as I do these other trips internationally and like to go for, you know, 10 days straight, I'd love to have like a home base in a beautiful campground to still come back to that and then go out and do a route for the day and then come back and then do another route. Mm-hmm. I mean, loops are awesome, let's be honest, but I still see this as like a great way to explore different bike routes. And then, as I mentioned kind of at the beginning, is like that flexibility just to be able to change it up and say, you know, let's go over here, let's go there.
And even if you want to do like a really long route where you're gone for several days, so Petit Trains Nord would be a great example, because in Mont Laurier and in, oh man, one of the places near, kind of halfway to Tremblant in Montreal, anyways, there's the City Hall has parking for RVs where you can park for free. So I think you could probably set your RV up. You could go for your 4 or 5 days, come back and pick your RV up and you're good to go. But I'm not 100% sure if you're allowed to be there that long. So don't quote me on that one.
disclaimer. Yeah, exactly. Here we go.
But I think that's also kind of a great option, or Walmarts or whatever, right?
Like, there's always something like that with those big box stores where you are allowed to do that. We're a little bit tighter here in Canada. You know, in the US, they're allowed to do something called boondocking, which we are not. And that means for them, they can just literally pull over on the side of the road and camp out, which is kind of cool, I will say. Obviously, being Canadian, we're a little bit more, whatever, cautious, nanny state, whatever you want to say. But that's fine. There's over 4,500 campgrounds in this country. If you can't find one, you've got problems. Mm-hmm. So you know, like there's something everywhere. And then even access through the cities, like you mentioned. So there's lots of options
there. Yeah, and when we were talking about potential, you know, RV campgrounds like that, I was using, when I went bikepack touring across Western Canada, I was using iOverlander, the app, which is predominantly made for overlanders.
Yes.
But it was really great for biking as well, you know? So like you could find lots of free places to camp, to park. And they're pretty up to date. Like people would say like, oh, this one's actually private. We got told to leave by the police and it's marked as no longer viable, right? So
yeah. I'd love to see like an integration, more of an integration with some of the apps, like even with like Ride GPS or something like that, you know, just more of an integration if you could layer in that kind of thing. And it'd be so cool if I could find a campground and whatever. I actually, patent pending, I got to go talk to somebody in the campground industry about that. But no, I'd love to see that layered in, even with like Garmin or something. Mm-hmm. It'd be really neat.
Yeah, just have them come up if you're searching. You can search whatever. I don't know how that would work, but yeah, it'd be neat. What are some like of your thoughts? I know you guys have a little list here of accessible bike pack adventures that you could do in conjunction with RVing.
Yeah, a couple I've done myself here. I mean, I definitely, the Gaspé,
I've heard good
one
things.
I think is sort of like definitely one of the top on my list.
Have you ridden the Trans-Gaspé?
I have, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. A few
years ago. Heard it's really great.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was honestly one of my favorites. I haven't done the Newfoundland Tea Railway. I saw that was on your site too. I think that's over 800, right?
Yeah, and now they make you, out of province people have to buy like a usage pass of some sort.
Oh, is that right?
But it's like, I think it's just a one-time fee of like $30 just to go towards maintenance and stuff.
Okay.
But not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's also Santa Rosa Valleys, right? Like that can take you through Kootenay River and all that. That's so cool out there in BC. So the other one that, you know, I know there's Gaspé in on that side, but on the other side of the St. Lawrence, you've got all the way up past Saguenay and Trois-Rivières. Like that's beautiful in there.
Yeah,
and that actually around was the one lakes of my first, too. And, yeah. Yeah, that was a bike trip for me, but it was also similar to what you did. It was an RV trip with us biking. It was more day biking. It was more than a loop. And that was a great example of, again, like we would go out, ride, I don't know, 50K or something, maybe even only 30K depending on the day, but then come back and then move the RV and then go somewhere else and ride. And you know, we had our mountain bikes as well as our gravel bikes with us. So that's the other thing is like, you know, on the outside of these RVs, you can store so much. So if you want to bring multiple bikes for different disciplines, then, you know, there's always that option too.
You're only limited by the quality of the thief that comes along.
Lock those things up, man.
Yeah, lock them up well.
Yeah. There's actually a company in Quebec that makes specific bike racks for RVs. And I can tell you, I had two on my Airstream and nobody ever stole from that one. Yeah.
Nice. What else what can we chat about here? What are like, I guess, misconceptions? There's got to be lots of different misconceptions about RVing that we could touch on.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think the first one is like not for people like me. that was the first one I came across, and it was like, okay, those are like, let's be honest, right? You know, older empty nesters, or even, you know, I'll say it, rednecks or whatever. Like there was that stigma. Man, I've seen that dissipate so much over the last decade or so. It's crazy. Like over 67% are under the age of 55 now. So 14% of Canadian households own an RV. Like, I mean, that's a staggering number if you think about it. Like there's over 2 million units out there.
Yeah, there's 6 or 7 just on my street alone. Yeah.
Like, is there?
Various. Yeah. So there's like my neighbor has a tent camper, a couple doors down it's a Mercedes, like a van.
Oh, Sprinter,
then, yeah. Yeah, Sprinter, and then down the road is a camper, and then yeah, there's just lots of them. Like, yeah, another tent.
Yeah, I think I live towards Niagara on the lake, and you know, in my area, it's like, it's just crazy by the escarpment here. And yeah, I think obviously if you're sitting downtown Toronto, you're kind of in a condo, sure. You're kind of like, I don't understand that statistic, but no, I mean, it's huge. It gets bigger and bigger, you know, as you go out west as well, especially in, you know, Alberta region. But so for me, I think that the stigma around the persona of RVing. The other thing would be like the actual drivability. So a lot of people are like, kind of like, whoa, that seems wild. Can I drive one of those? And and I get it. They're big. And, you know, sometimes you're passing a truck and like the back end shakes out a little bit, especially on a bigger unit. But the drivability factor, the reality is that the technology has gotten so much better over the years that we're not talking about the 60s Winnebago guy anymore, right? We're talking about like these crazy, you just said it, Mercedes Sprinters and stuff like that. These are high end, you know, there's high end tech in a lot of this stuff now. So it's really cool how that drivability factor's kind of changed.
And I would say also like the difference with an RV versus a trailer is, you know, like backing up a trailer is really tricky if you don't know how to back up a trailer well.
So
an RV would be more like backing up a normal vehicle, just a really big one.
Yeah, so we kind of count RVing as the overall thing, motorhome and or travel trailers, yeah, whatever. No, that's cool. That's the full segment. I think that you know, we've seen marriages dissolve over this kind of thing. It's kind of interesting to watch, like the meltdowns in campgrounds. But
did you ever see the videos? It's total segue. The videos of the guys who would go and cheer at the boat launches and cheer people as they're trying to back up.
Oh yeah,
best videos ever.
Those are, exactly. So it's the same. It's the same sort of thing. And you know, we've done this with actually celebrities before, and I won't say who, but you know, there's been stuff on camera where I'm just like, keep rolling, man. It's great. Cause it's life, you know, it's like, you know, I said left, no, the other left, that kind of thing. Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's like, you're looking at a camera inside and you're both on a walkie talkie or whatever. But look, I mean, ultimately, yeah, it requires some patience. If you don't have a propensity to the outdoors and you're not kind of like a fun, energetic person, then you're not going to love what we are about. And I think that that's the most important thing, is that you got to want to be outside. You got to want to be, you can be in luxury. You can be up off the ground. If it's pissing rain, you can be inside watching a movie, eating popcorn, literally chilling out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if not, then, you know, we are about like just sort of testing yourself and being out there. And that includes the drivability factor of this as well. So I think it's embraced by, obviously, as we said, so many, those that don't want to, that's cool.
I'm going to play the devil's advocate here, but like, I mean, RVs aren't cheap. And so it feels like, you know, you kind of said to me, you said earlier kind of like the category of person that would be doing it. It feels like it's like retired people or people that can do it full time. Like, you know, what would you say, like for those that aren't doing it full time, how to manage, you know, cause maybe you have experience and advice on how to manage the finance side of that to make it worthwhile and, you know, fit within the comfort zone of the typical middle-class family, you know?
Look, we're talking about, you know, expendable income here or whatever. I've always kind of said we're in leisure time and money is the segment.
Don't get a second mortgage, you're saying.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. So, obviously, depending on what you choose, like you mentioned the tent trailer before, those start at like $10,000. But let's be realistic here. Let's just use like a realistic example of like a travel trailer that, you know, can sleep four people, and is sort of like middle of the road kind of thing. You're looking at around 50K Canadian for that. And obviously you're going to need a tow vehicle. So you're going to have an SUV or something like that. It doesn't have to be a pickup truck, but it's going to have to be an SUV. The reality is that you can amortize RVs like homes. So they actually get amortized over 20 years.
Oh, okay.
So that cost of $50,000 actually ends up being like, I think it's like $180 a month. It actually comes down significantly if you amortize it like that. Now, I'm no financial expert, so disclaimer, go talk to your, RV dealer your finance guy. But I can tell you that if you look at it from that regard, I mean, it's a few hundred dollars a month. Now, if you're getting into the bigger stuff, and which a lot of people do, and you're over 100K or whatever, then your other option for something that you're not using all the time potentially is, to use one of these companies like RVeasy in Canada,
That's where you can do part ownership.
Yeah. Now, my industry doesn't frown on that. I'm just again, disclaimer, it's like the dealers that we work with. Some work with them, some don't.
Okay.
And I don't know the ins and outs of insurance. So, always make sure you're covered. I definitely want to pass that advice on. But I have heard great stories, and I've heard very, happy stories about people that have been able to offset the cost, and they're still well insured, and they're still, financed okay and whatever. So as long as you can make sure all those items are ticked, then
why not? For like us, that was our first intro to going, RVing, and we had a really small one, but it did the trick. We could pull it with a car. It was that small. It was like a 13 footer or something.
We're part of a sharing economy, right? So Airbnb, et cetera, et cetera. So this is another reality of our industry. And look, you're right. There's those that are a bit later in life. Maybe the grandkids are there and they do have the big $150,000 unit or whatever. And, that's great. I mean, they can afford it at that stage. And certainly that's a huge part of the market. What I think that we've just seen that increase of is like, you mentioned at the very beginning is like van life, nomadic entrepreneurs.
More
like the younger demographic that are actually figuring out how to like
convert their own RV maybe
on a cheaper budget.
Yeah. And people are even converting their own vans and like,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even converting their own vans or a Ford van or whatever. But yeah, I mean, there's look at the content on YouTube over this. I mean, it's crazy. There's people taking old Airstreams, and renting them. I mean, that's a whole different cult segment, there. It's kind of neat. I mean, where there's a will, there's a way, right, Chris? So ultimately I think that we're talking about something that could be expensive. I think people find a way to do it, and they find a way to do it well, if that's what they really want to do. Mm-hmm. And all I would offer up is that I think that this provides just the upside of it, is so much more than the downside in comparison, and especially as you compare like the finance portion of this, like the affordability and value, the innate value of it is just so high.
Yeah. And funny story, I was in 2020 when I was in Western Canada. I was in Yukon, maybe I was in BC at the time. And I met this guy, and he had a big RV. And they were talking about how they bought this smaller RV that was maybe 27 feet or 30 feet long, so they could take the ferries between some of the islands more easily. And I said, oh, what about the other one? He said, oh, it's just at home. And then he went on to tell me about how hard farmers have it. And I was like, yeah, sounds awful.
Yeah.
I was like, that was the most misplaced conversation. I was like,
I don't think so, bud. The crazy ones to me are like, you see, especially down where I live and, near the border here, you see these giant class A's come up, which are the bus kind, the rock star bus kind.
Yeah.
But then they're like towing a Mercedes Benz behind it, or whatever. Like they're towing their car, with their thing. Cause of course, when they get to the campground, they need their Benz to be able to go around.
And they probably want to just set up for the summer. And
yeah, I mean, that's, that's a kind of interesting point right there, is that I talk about freedom and flexibility and all the rest of it. But, for a lot of people, for over 50% of people, this is their lifestyle, where they own a portion in a campground, and they've decked it out literally and figuratively. Like, they have a deck around their RV, and I'm not talking like a trailer park. I'm talking about an RV that you can move and that, you know, you kind of sit by a lake. So it's kind of like their little cottage, and there's a whole community there. That's another
point. Yeah, we biked to Quebec City, my wife and I, and when we first moved to Canada, and we were talking to somebody that had exactly that kind of setup. They had their RV and they had everything. And they're like, "Oh, well, do you need to put stuff in our fridge? It's here in our shed." And you open the shed and there's a fridge. You're like, "Just feel free to go in and out if you need to put stuff in there." And we're like, "This is great." Like, spoiled. As I carried a 12-pack of beer on the back of my rack on the bike.
Nice. Good for you. See, you fit into the RV community no problem at all. There you go.
Yeah.
Natural.
What about, just to bring it up and to get some, like, what have you guys noticed with regards to marginalized groups? Because, like you said earlier, people look at it as, like, traditionally it was the rednecks or the whatever kind of people that RV, but that's very generalized. But, you know, you could easily say traditionally it was white people. How has that changed? And I think when I went to one of the provincial parks in the region, I did see a lot more diversity.
Just based on what I've seen from, there's two things here. First of all, there's the RV shows that kind of go across the country and, you know, at different times and provinces. And I would see the mosaic of the RV show has changed so significantly over the last five plus years. And a lot of, you know, I guess, quote unquote new Canadians, but probably not really new Canadians, just people getting into the segment, right? And I think I see that. The second thing from a marketing perspective is the sort of opportunities that come in front of us for Go RVing, for advertising, is a lot of different demographics and different cultures. And I would say that that's really on the rise. So it's definitely climbing. Is it predominantly white still? Yeah. Let's be honest, it is.
Like, but biking is too, right?
Like anything, right? Yeah. So it's going to take time. What I love is that people are coming to Canada and they're kind of teaching those of us that have been here for a long time, like, a lesson, because they're saying, "Dude, you've been here, and where have you been?" I mean, this is not so much for the bike pack audience, but, like, you know, for others, right, that have just kind of been sitting around. And, like, they're here for, you know, a small amount of time, and they're ready. They're like, "Let's go explore. You know what? I'm fully vested. I'm taking the family. Yep, yep. I'm buying one of these things, and we're going to go explore. I don't know anything about camping, but we're going to try this." And I think that that really says something.
Yeah, and I've known lots of I know lots of Canadians that don't have a passport, and I also know lots that have very, very, like, some have barely even left the city they live in, you know. So it's
And hey, man, as I said before, each their own. And, you know, I am never going to market an RV to someone that doesn't have a propensity to the outdoors. That's always kind of like our philosophy with this. But you know, if you do, I definitely want to sort of open people's eyes to the possibilities of, like, that kind of exploration, and this is an option at least. And I just think, just sort of coming back to this group, is like, I feel like there's just such a, when we first spoke, I remember, like, you know, when it sort of came up, I was like, yeah, there's the incidence of biking and RVing is, like, almost like 70% or something ridiculous. So it's definitely one of the biggest activities. And I think I'd love to see if bike packers could actually use this as, like, kind of what you did,
like a launching
point. And especially like, you know, if there's different things going on in life, I think that would be a pretty cool thing.
Well, we went to the, that year where we did have the RV, we also went to Hurton and Halliburton, which was a gravel race in, Halliburton. And, we camped in the RV where other people had their tents and stuff. There were a few people with RVs and it was super fun. You know, we did a bike race. My wife and the baby and sister-in-law, they did some hikes, and it's just a great way to travel. You know, and also I see, like, when you go to a provincial campground, you'll see all the kids zooming around on their bikes. I mean, they'll had to get there somehow. Right. And obviously they didn't bike in from home. So, you know, there's, like you said, there's definitely a connection between the two. What about environmental considerations when it comes to RVing and stuff? I mean, it's you know,
for me, there's environmental considerations around, you know, the units themselves, obviously, motorized being, you know, heavier and a carbon footprint, getting a lot better with fuel efficiency, battery. You know, we have seen that come into RVing more. There are no Tesla buses, fortunately, but
yet
there are, you know, Winnebago has looked at, you know, all battery stuff. Obviously with ranges, it makes it a bit challenging, range and weight. That said, there's a lot of hybrid components out there. I would say the RV industry has made a lot more strides, although I still feel as though generally the RV industry is a little behind in that regard, if I'm being completely honest. Hope I don't get fired for that. But what I'm passionate about, Chris, is more environmental sustainability when you're out there on the road. So like what I hate seeing, and it's happened to me before, like when I was shooting one of the Wildhood commercials, like we were like far gone in the interior in BC, and you know, we were in a native land area, but there was a stop, and you could see where people had like kind of stopped for the view, and there was just like all this garbage everywhere.
Yeah.
And these guys kind of came up, and we got a crew of like 40 people, and we're just like, you know what? No, before we start shooting today, before we start rolling, everybody pick up the garbage around here. And it was crazy how much we grabbed from that area. And it's like, I mean, in the middle of nowhere, it's beautiful, yeah. Like just stunning. But it struck me right then that I'm just like, this is a lot of RVers. It could be a lot of people in cars too, but there's a lot of RVers coming through and like, you know, stopping and then kind of throwing their trash. So It's not just that, it's everything. It's the total gambit of environmental sustainability, like less of a footprint, being careful when you're on trails, like whether you're hiking or biking, et cetera, like, you know, flora, fauna, all that kind of stuff. But I think that we have a responsibility to the environment upon which we, you know, visit. Mm-hmm. And I that's definitely a big deal for me for Go RVing.
Awesome. And want to tell us more about Wildhood?
Yeah. So Wildhood, for those who haven't heard it, is basically, it's a concept that comes up with it's sort of like that innate child. It's like that child inside of you that kind of never grew up. Like as we get older, there's all these rules and, you know, things that we have to follow, and we kind of lose part of ourselves as we go through that path in life for a lot of people, not for everybody, but for most of us. Wildhood's kind of like that inner child, that freedom to discover, that curiosity, like that kind of that person that built the fort in the living room, you know, mm-hmm. It's that kind of like, and so the first ad we did was really actually more of a call out to like parenting and helicopter parenting, and talking about how kids want to, you know, they want to see their neighbor without a chaperone. They want to skip roam free. They want to, you know, eat with their hands, eat with a stick, you know, et cetera, like all that kind of sort of raw stuff. And man, we were like inundated from moms and teachers and everything. It was just like, whoa, what have we hit on here? You know, bring back Wildhood. And I even get the feels now talking about it. Like, you know, that was 2015. And we've done like four iterations of the ad. And the last one is Find Your Wildhood. You are out there. And, you know, it's all about like the sort of, again, the sort of mental health of like the other version of you is out there somewhere. And it's normally going to be somewhere in nature. That's where you're going to connect with the real version of you. And it's a story about a guy chasing himself ultimately to find his wildhood. But I think, you know, it transcends through a lot of different stuff. It's a very unique campaign, but it's one that we, you know, it's a philosophy that we believe in and that we can back up no matter what kind of person or RVer you are or want to be. I think it's something that's very timely for Canadians as well. So it's a really cool campaign and we're very proud to have come up with here.
Awesome. It's amazing. I have to watch your videos then. I guess they're on the Go RVing site or YouTube page.
Yeah. So check out gorving.ca. And, you know, one of the things that we are, as I said at the beginning, we're not for profit. We're brand agnostic. the tools that we have got on there are for you. They're for you know, those that are thinking about trying or you know, don't even know where to start or have started and need to know where to go next, you know. So there's everything from trip guides, affordability calculators, RV selectors, dealer pages, campground listings, all that kind of stuff. So GoRVing.ca is really the destination for all things RVing, and that's where we're trying to be a resource. We're here to inform, inspire, and educate. That's mm-hmm. really what we're trying to do. And I appreciate this opportunity to talk to you today, Chris.
Yeah, and is this all kind of is this like all part of the rebrand in a sense? I know you have a little thing here about your rebrand, and it seems like it's an in progress. Rebrand.
No, the rebrand's been done. Okay. So there's like a new logo, which is kind of like people don't know if it's a pulse or a mountain or a path and whatever. And it's kind of cool. We feel like it's a little bit more identifiable. And I mean, it's just, like I said, we've been around since 97, right? So we kind of were hosting that same scripted logo for a while. So we mm-hmm. gave ourselves a little shake in the past year. We've launched a brand new shiny website along with the new branding. And yeah, just following up with, you know, our marketing campaigns and then working with different content creators and stuff like that across the country just to kind of try and get in front of different audiences.
Yeah, yeah. And what was I going to ask? I had something on my mind. I should slip my head. Anyways, if there's anything you want to talk about while I think of it.
No, I'm pretty good. I mean, I feel like, as I said, I mean, I would like to know more. I'd like to hear more from people that are like getting into bikepacking and then maybe using the RV as like kind of their sort of like home base, or even like checking out different routes or checking different gear, like how different gear works at different times, all that kind of like mm-hmm. tests and trials and stuff like that. I'd love to hear more from the audience about that.
Well, I do have actually a question. I was going to ask you, I know, sorry, I kind of interrupted you, but...
No, it's all good.
You know, as a not-for-profit, how do you guys finance yourselves? How do you stay afloat, or how does it, you know, where does the money come from? And because that often tells you where the interests lie. But... you know, I would love to... I know I mentioned it when we first chatted. I would love to see GoRV Canada... you know, somehow in help with campsites and like to make these Canada have something like these hiker biker sites, you know, at the campgrounds, because it doesn't really exist in most provinces. And if there's a way you guys could be involved in helping that along as well, it would be beneficial to all. And I'm sure it would help draw more people.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really great point. Let me address the last one first. I think sure. that's definitely right up my alley. Obviously having contact with the Canadian Recreational Vehicle Association, which is like the more doing the governance and stuff like that. They speak to MPs all the time. And I know we're constantly working and battling with different provinces and provincial MPs about the campgrounds. The amount of legislation that faces all these guys is insane.
Oh, yeah?
To be a campground owner is truly like, I mean, I kind of want to slow clap them. It's insane what they have to go through in order to comply. And you know, they're out in nature. They should. Some of it's maybe a little overkill. But I feel like, especially when we come to more of the sustainability side of things and, you know, or environmental stewardship, let's call it that. I definitely think the hike and bike component is a great point, and I'd love to work on that more. And you know, if I can give you some contacts, I definitely will. But I'll definitely put the word forward.
Let's figure that out together.
Yeah, I love it. We're conquering the world already. Well, we're conquering Canada anyway. And then, you know, for the profit thing, it's actually quite a simple answer. It's everybody pays into it, so it's a safety standard seal that goes on to the side of every unit. And okay. It's attached to safety standards, and there is a marketing expansion fee that the manufacturer pays on top of that sticker. So the manufacturer pays for it.
Oh, okay.
And every manufacturer pays for it, whether it's in Canada or the US. Well, obviously, not obviously, but over 90% come from the US now. So yeah, it's a really neat way of being able to get out there and, as I said, sort of inspire and educate different audiences, and do it in such a way that's like, you know, as I said, not with self-interest. Yes, we want to grow the segment. Yes, that's my job. My job is to grow the RV lifestyle in Canada, but we want to do it in such a way that it makes sense. And I think that if you look at the website alone, that speaks volumes to what we're doing.
Cool. And last thing, with regards to, elbows up days. And I know you're probably supposed to be very neutral in talking about different brands and stuff, but are there any brands that are Canadian that people should know about that they, if they're looking at saying, I want to support Canadian RV companies.
Yeah.
Without digging into all the research.
Yeah. So there are Canadian brands, and there's Canadian brands that do, different things from park models, like, all the way through to like the Class B vans we're talking about. They're listed on our site as well. We have got like a Canadian content portion on our site, and we do encourage buying Canada. We want to work. Canadian dealers are bleeding right now. It's like crazy what they're going through. Imagine ordering these units and not knowing if at one point it's 25% more or not. It's just, it's so insane. And everyone's going through their different piece here, but, if you want to support Canada, definitely you can check that portion out on our site. There's also, as I mentioned before, the CRVA, the Canadian Recreational Vehicle Association. I know it's a bit of a mouthful, but CRVA, check them out. They represent the Canadian manufacturers.
Okay.
And that's a great segue to find different manufacturers in Canada. It's not huge, Chris. Like, to be honest, it's like a lot of the manufacturing base in Canada. We lost it over the last couple of decades. But you know what? The ones that are here are doing it really well. And I would definitely go check them out.
Yeah. Oh, and there's also, I know we never just popped in my head, truck toppers. Those are neat little units. That
truck campers?
Yeah, truck campers.
Truck campers are, they're really, so that's like, again, that's getting more and more popular. Yeah, the one thing we didn't talk about this is like kind of like, there's all these segments that's like happened. Like you had these tent trailers
before.
There's
so many, isn't there?
Yeah. But now you've got like the teardrops.
Yeah.
And so like the teardrop is like, that's the market that, is, I would say, the sort of late 30s, early 40s.
Because maybe, I also see that they're kind of jacked up more, right? Like some of them can be pretty off-road capable.
We've worked with people that, have, they go out and forage and do all this kind of stuff. And, they literally like live off the land kind of thing, because they take their RV and they go, they go out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Now, boondocking and whatever, I got to say all that stuff. But yeah, outside of that, no, there's a lot of cool small units that won't break the bank, that, are meant for really like two people or maybe the situation you were in before with like just a young one.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely a big part of the market too.
Cool. And I guess on that note, like, do you see a lot more growth in that market because young people are kind of picking this up?
I mean,
or is it growing kind of everywhere in that sense?
What I've seen is the tent trailer market kind of decline and that market increase as manufacturers have realized that budgets are tighter and the segment, the market segment has changed so much. So I see the sort of more smaller off-roady, let's call them teardrop trailers, but also, smaller, smaller travel trailer climb significantly. Okay. So I think that segment of the market is going to climb significantly.
Probably just because you don't necessarily need the full size SUV or the big truck.
Well, that's it. So the benefits of that are like so you don't need the big tow vehicle because Airstream, for example, they always kind of like drive them around with Teslas and stuff like that just to show that they can do that. And they can because they're so lightweight. But yeah, so lighter weight means smaller tow vehicle, which is great. But it also means that you can store it in your driveway without it being a problem.
Right.
It also means that it doesn't break the bank. It's smaller budget. And from the drivability factor, getting in and out, moving around is you're a lot more nimble, right? So if that's your jam, and especially to this audience, I would say that that's where I'd be going. Is more that sort of area. Now, attaching a bike wrap to a teardrop, I don't know. It's going to have to go in the car. So
they might make some for the front there, just off the front that hook onto the.
Yeah, Thule's got. Yeah, I think Thule's got something too. Like
awesome. Well, Chris, hey, I won't keep you all night. Thanks for your time.
Man,
this was really,
thanks.
Really cool talk. And I definitely want to be in touch with you more and to try to figure out if we can there's a way we can tackle this whole campgrounds thing for bikers, because BC's pretty good, Quebec's pretty good, and that's about it that I know
that's
of.
That's about it.
So, yeah.
No, I'd love to hear more around that. I really would. And you know what? I think the fact that that came out of this conversation is worthwhile alone. So I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Chris. You don't have appreciate to hang up, but I will end the recording. So talk to you soon, and keep on pedaling.
Cheers.